only do if any of you have any had any personal encounters, either personally yourselves or with people that you have encountered in the course of your life or preaching activities who are perhaps involved in this demon, ghost, and spirit worshiping. Anybody? Oh, Keshava Priya.
When I was studying, I was partly living together with friends who were living in squats. And like every 2 months they used to have those, it's kind of night, you know, when dark moon's night. And then they used to go to some forest and worship the witches, let's say. It was, you know, mainly what I saw what was happening was using drugs and having sex with everyone around. But they thought it was some part of their religion.
Well, that is part of, you know, if you examine, you know, many of these religions and the mode of ignorance, that's pretty much what they're about. So, yeah, it's still very prominent in society today, unfortunately. You know, even in the so-called developed countries of the world, there's a lot of this going on. Dr. Chris.
In the philosophy that I was studying before, I came to Krishna consciousness, spirits, and like, for example, like they used to worship fog because they thought it was like, you know, some
Who's they?
They were called the Yaqui Indians. It was a series of books by Carlos Castaneda.
Oh, Carlos Castaneda.
Yeah.
All right.
So I was actually going, before I was, the Saturday that I met the devotees, I was actually going to Mexico to join them, because I thought, you know, I used to like think for myself, and ask it questions, and they used to stare at rocks and all these sort of things, you know, and receive information from them. So they said, so I used to try to do.
Because there's spirits connected with them, and you can get.
Yeah, that's right.
So you were kind of into that too.
Yeah, I was so much into it that I was actually for it, like the day that I was supposed to leave, the night that I met the devotees, to go and to try to find them there in Mexico. And then I went to the bodies that day.
So you were going to go try to join the Yaqui Indians in Mexico and become a medicine man,
yeah,
or something like that. Mm-hmm. Commune with the spirits. What was your motive?
My motive?
Yeah.
Because I thought that it was I was convinced that it was the absolute truth. I thought that, you know, these guys, they had it, you know, because
they
it was like
it.
Nothing I had ever read ever before, you know, and it was like...
You had confidence that they had some, like, higher technology than just like material science,
yeah,
or something like that?
Yeah, they have this thing they call the art of dreaming, where it's like, has to do with a lot of these dreaming practices, becoming conscious in your dreams. So I was practicing that a lot too, and some of the things, like, I started having, like, really far out dreams, and lots of them were starting to come true, and this sort of thing, and it was like, really... You know, so I was so convinced, absolutely convinced of that.
Oh, okay.
Of course, I was really into mystic powers and stuff too, so I thought,
right,
you know, I can get some of those.
But see, this is, I think, one thing that's really so great about Krishna consciousness is that it deals head-on with all this stuff. You know, like most religions that I've encountered anyways, they just talk about God, you know, some abstract principle. But I think in Krishna consciousness, like you read Krishna book or Srimad Bhagavatam, and it deals with all of this stuff. Even in Bhagavad Gita, that's the message I'm trying to get across about Bhagavad Gita, is that Bhagavad Gita actually deals with all these different levels of God realization that are out there that people do have. And it shows really how devotion to Krishna is superior to all of these things. You know, it analyzes them all and shows how worship of Krishna, bhakti yoga, is actually the superior mode, but it actually deals with them, you know, like head on, you know, doesn't ignore them. You know, it says, yeah, they're realities. These things are realities, but devotion to Krishna is supreme. So anyone else have any Veda Vyas?
Is there a Gauri issue with you?
Well, this is the section for it.
So I was as a bhakti leader, I had these two guys that came from Quebec. And one of them, he explained to me how he was living in a small town. Répentigny is in Quebec, a small town. It's about 13 miles from my house. So So he said that when he was a boy, his mother couldn't make him live because his father left, so he went to this house. And there was this man who was living in the forest. And then when he was living in the forest, the house was guarded by German Shepherd, quite a few years. And he said that there was some sacrifices for Satan, so he had a star and the whole thing. And because he was a little boy, you know, and this man, he was working in a factory, just welder. He was actually a welder. He only had one lung and he was like a chain smoker. And everybody liked him for some reason. He was such an attractive person. But what he was doing is every now and then, he was doing a woman sacrifice, and he would kill the woman to Satan. And then after this, he would put them tie them up on rocks and then put them in the river. So he told me about this, and the police, there were some people who were going on skidoo one time, mm-hmm. and they were going and they went over the river and they fell in under the river, not in that under the ice. Mm-hmm. So the police, the RCMP went to look for the body, and they find one body, another body, another body, there's a bunch of bodies. So that's one, you know. And then he was 11 years old, and he said that he saw how the 70 women get killed. And yes. He said that they told him, they took him, and he says, you better not say anything. They took a knife, and they put his tongue up, and they took a knife.
Through the tongue.
Through the tongue. And he says, you better never speak about what you saw.
Yeah, so there are some very demoniac. Yeah, there's. I mean, these things are definitely out there, and we are going to encounter them. And it's even explained in the Bhagavatam that even, you know, there's that whole incident where Judd Bharat's going to be sacrificed, you know, to the Kali goddess. And there, Prabhupada says that even still today in India, sometimes there's still times that happens, that, you know, there's some human kind of sacrifice made. Of course, then we see what happened in that story, you know, that Kali kind of took her revenge on these people. But it's definitely out there. It's definitely of these people, they think these demons, ghosts, and spirits are supreme, and we see this in the Vedic literature. It's there today. Actually, the picture that we get from the Vedic literature and Bhagavad Gita is sort of that there's a cosmic hierarchy of beings, where you have, you know, Krishna, you know, at the top, and then you have the demigods like Brahma, and then you have minor demigods like the Apsaras and then Gandharvas, and then you have these demoniac creatures, the big demons like the Rakshasas and people like that. And then kind of minor sort of demons like Bhutas and Pretas and all kinds of things like that. And then human beings and then animals and, you know, ghosts and different things like that. There's this whole hierarchy. And pretty much, if you study cultural anthropology, you'll find that people all over the world tend to have this hierarchy, but they tend to focus on one level of it or another. You know, I was doing some research in this area because it has to do with the next book I'm writing, which is called Human Devolution. Kind of, because I wrote this book, Forbidden Archaeology, which sort of says the Darwinian idea is wrong. You know, there's all kinds of evidence that goes against it. But then people want to know, well, then what's the right idea? And what the Vedas explain is that human beings kind of, we don't evolve up from the apes on this planet like the materialistic scientists say, but we kind of come down, you know, from some higher spiritual level. You know, ultimately we belong with Krishna in the spiritual world, but when the souls come to this world, there's kind of this process where, you know, there are different demigods that reproduce in different ways, and, you know, they produce all the other living things, you know, by, you could call it a process of reverse evolution or devolution or something like that. But the point is that there's this cosmic hierarchy of beings, and in doing research about this, because it's really significant that people all over the world have this idea. You know, it's very well developed. They have this idea. It's sort of interesting that people in all times and places, they have this idea of this cosmic hierarchy of beings. But one place, like in, it was in Africa, there was a tribal group, and they said, well, yeah, they're worshiping kind of like on this level, you know, like this demon, ghost, and spirit level. And they said, and so somebody asked them, well, is that all there is? And she said, well, there is a God, a supreme God, but we don't worship him because you only go to him for spiritual things. And they were just quite honest. We want material things. You know, we want to kill our enemies and, you know, get wealth and things like that. So therefore, we worship, you know, these ghosts and spirits and things like that. Actually, there's a incident from, I guess, Bhaktivinoda Thakur's life. You know, if you study his life, there was an incident where, you know, in some village, some people there were worshiping some ghost, you know, that was inhabiting some tree. And then he, I guess, had started reading the, had, having the Bhagavatam read near that tree and drove, you know, the ghost away that these people were, you know, worshiping for bad purposes. So, so these things are there. Does anybody else have any experience? Yes. In South Africa? Yeah.
What really freaked me out is that in that tradition, you find people who reduce human parts, actually, your finger, your finger, or something. And then they take them and they actually, they offer to their guru, so-called. The person makes something, it's an offering. By you getting that part, you get become wealthy or something. Mm-hmm. And this is really going on. I remember as a child, very fun. And this news was going around, and people came, their fingers or something, their toes, something. And that is like the importance of the reason that. And my grandmother actually, she was a very religious woman, but she had a friend. And every year she was living in a community, a church, because they're being cured in a church. Mm-hmm. So this, her friend of hers, every morning she would wake up with a nail, you know, and you take up a nail every day, because some spirit would come and start to, you
know. Wow.
Yeah. And there are many, many stories actually like that. That you see what they do is that they take dead bodies. I don't know how they do it, but they take dead bodies. And somehow or the other they use people who have died and to attack other people. Like my auntie, she told me actually that every time she sees people coming to her, they harass her like that. So they use that. Sometimes they find the head is shaved. You don't see how she can be shaved.
Something happens at night or something. Yeah, well, even I think when Prabhupada was staying at John Lennon's estate in London, you can read about this in the Lilamrita, he was pointing out there, he said there are ghosts here, and they stay near the stable. You know, he says, I've seen them. You know. So he had the devotees, you know, chant Hare Krishna to drive them away. And of course we have, you know, Mother Yashoda, you know, like chanting different mantras and things like that to, you know, keep them away from Krishna too, you know. So at least, so somebody else had some experience. Yeah. Could have been.
I had friends and they were followers of Satan and Satan.
Yeah, we say Satan.
They were making those different celebrations to get power from him. And once the drunken father began to beat their mother. And one of these two tried to help her, and the father took up the axe and threw it straight to his back, and he killed him. And it so much influenced the second brother that he, at that point he completely changed and began to look out for the way to God. Of course, he didn't really met Krishna consciousness and he became a staunch follower of Christ. But it showed me how this experience of death changed him completely.
Yeah, I mean, we really are living in the age of Kali, when a lot of these things are actually very, you know, prominent. And then, but then we can also see in like Bhagavatam too, you had these people, they would try to call up different demons. You know, they use different mantras and create summon these demons, and then go try to have them do something. But if they didn't do it exactly right, then it would turn on them. You know, this famous story in the Krishna book about that, you know, about the demon, you know, like turning on the person who tried to summon him up, you know, because he chanted the mantras wrong and things like that.
It's also like, in South Africa, it happens is some Indians, they have a thing called trance. They chant mantras and they get possessed. And then they can walk on fire and put needles through their body and pull chariots. All those kind of things that you can't do with normal
body. Yeah. Yeah, so there's so many of these manifestations. They're actually described in Bhagavad Gita as religion and the mode of ignorance, which involves like torturing the body and, you know, just doing all these things. Somebody new? We'll get back to you. Okay. Let's see if any further reports of these activities. Who hasn't made a contribution yet? Did you say something already? Okay, go ahead.
No, this should be in Seattle, in the airport, Victoria. Around that group, you just have some funny things going on. I meet lots of people when I walk by. Oh, I'm a witch, you know, I'm a pagan. So usually, if you say something like, he's like, really? Wow, that's wonderful. He'll stop and you say, yeah, actually it's not a sectarian belief. Tell him that it talks about it in Bhagavad Gita, they'll take it for you. I met one man who was a sergeant in the army. I found a lot of people, a lot of soldiers, actually also worship Satan. Uh-huh. Because he says, you want to know my religion of choice? It was really tall kind of. Uh-huh. He pulls his dog chains out from his dog chain and says, he is a Satanist in his religion.
Yeah.
And he says, yeah, I'm a Satan worshiper. But somehow he ended up taking the Bhagavad Gita and a couple other big books. Gave a nice explanation to him.
Well, because there is, I think part of the reason for that is that it's actually a kind of personalism, you know. I mean, as bad as it is, it's, you know, belief in something that's spiritual and personal. And then I think you can actually, you know, because I went through some experience like that myself. I tried so many things before I became a devotee. But I think because it's spiritual and personal, then when, you know, if they encounter, you know, like Krishna consciousness and they've got some, I don't know, something, some agyata sukriti or some piety in their background from somewhere, then they can actually appreciate, well, if I'm going to worship something that's personal and spiritual, then maybe like the best one to worship is, you know, like Krishna. Because like Krishna's presented, he's all attractive, you know, like most ways in which God is presented is not very attractive. But if they can see, oh yes, well here's the all attractive, you know, like personality of Godhead, and then of course Krishna has so many interesting pastimes too, where he, you know, like he actually whips many of these demons, many of these big demons. So at least on that level, you know, some people may be attracted. Well, you know, if you want to worship something that's powerful and spiritual and personal, you might as well go with the guy who's strongest. Actually, I've heard another place that some in South India sometimes they some of them they still worship Hiranyakashipu. Has anybody heard that?
Well, Ravana.
Oh, Ravana. Oh, still worship Ravana, right? Have you heard that?
Yeah.
They still worship Ravana down there.
Yeah, they make a big. They make a big deity of rock, and they put a garland of shoes.
Hmm.
A garland of shoes.
Yeah.
Why shoes?
Because it's low. And they make an insult to Ram, because Rava is the actual, there is two Ramayana, and one of them is the winner of the, Ramayana is Ram.
Right, yeah, so there are these, but anyways, this is a phenomenon, it's out there, there's demon worshippers, ghost worshippers, and spirit worshippers, but as, you know, Antoine was saying, sometimes, they can turn into devotees, and I, as I said, I think the reason for that is because they're inclined to something personal and spiritual, not something abstract, but something that's very personal and spiritual. Is it Ramachandra?
In India, there are so many things, but when I came here, all this line, in spiritual line, and I was very young, a child. Moving the scale in month of August, September. It's called in Hindi that is Shravan month.
Shravan month, yeah. Okay.
So this is Sapira, you know, the body, called body. They used to play with snake. And how say, mothers they give milk to snake.
Oh.
So everywhere. When I was going on the stage, and one Sapira body, another body, they were playing with a mantra. One was going to throw mantra to other by fire, and he was playing like his flute.
Mm.
And he put flute on land. By mantra, he born that flute. Attracted by that. His mantra is so powerful that he burned another flute.
He made a flute.
Flute.
Oh, okay.
So he got burned immediately. So he was very sorry because that was the base to control the mantras, to control the snake. He was very sorry. And then he another part, he threw the mantra to another part. And by that mantra, because, no, sorry, this was, he was very, I'm sorry, because he told me about his throat. So somebody was there in between the audience, and he threw that mantra to another party. He was not supposed to do anything, but he was another person.
Mm-hmm.
And he threw that mantra to this man. So he had wife. He threw mantra to his wife, and that woman just go up to an electric pole.
She went up on an electric pole.
She went to electric upside. So then she was naked, and she was going on the pole. Then I saw it practically in my play. She asked one party, who threw this mantra? Please come forward. Otherwise, I will throw mantra, and you will not sleep by life.
So they're throwing mantras back and forth.
Yes.
Okay.
So he didn't come forward. He didn't come forward. So this man threw mantra, another mantra, to that man. And he came forward, a vomiting blood, and go down to his lotus feet. His feet.
Yeah. So I think we can just kind of reflect how fortunate we are. that we've been engaged in the process of bhakti yoga, which is such it's a very powerful process. You know, it can actually protect, Krishna will protect us from all of these different kinds of creatures that are there. And it's such a nice process, too. Yeah, it's such a nice process, chanting Hare Krishna, you know, hearing Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, taking prasadam. You know, such a nice process, transcendental process. So, in any case, I want to, let's go to Bhagavad Gita, chapter 17, text 4. So we'll just get this, see what Krishna has to say about this here. So in this 17th chapter, which is called Divisions of Faith, and if you actually go through these Divisions of Faith, you'll see there's religion in these different modes of nature. So, but in any case, starting with text 4, Yajanti Satvika Devan Yaksharakshamsi Rajasa Pretan Bhuta Garams Chanye Yajante Tamasajana. So the translation, men in the mode of goodness worship the demigods, those in the mode of passion worship the demons, and those in the mode of ignorance worship ghosts and spirits. And in his purport, Srila Prabhupada says, in this verse, the Supreme Personality of Godhead describes different kinds of worshipers according to their external activities. According to scriptural injunctions, only the Supreme Personality of Godhead is worshipable. But those who are not very conversant with or faithful to the scriptural injunctions worship different objects according to their specific situations in the modes of material nature. Those who are situated in goodness generally worship the demigods, and that's the subject we're going to get into in our next lesson, which will start next Monday. The demigods include Brahma, Shiva, and others such as Indra, Chandra, and the sun god. There are various demigods. Those in goodness worship a particular demigod for a particular purpose. Similarly, those who are in the mode of passion worship the demons. We can recall that during the Second World War, a man in Calcutta worshipped Hitler because, thanks to that war, he had amassed a large amount of wealth by dealing in the black market. Similarly, those in the modes of passion and ignorance generally select a powerful man to be God. They think that anyone can be worshipped as God and that the same results will be obtained. Now, it is clearly described here that those who are in the mode of passion worship and create such gods, and those who are in the mode of ignorance and darkness worship dead spirits. Sometimes people worship at the tomb of some dead man. Sexual service is also to be considered in the mode of darkness. You know, so we're hearing some reference to that. Similarly, in remote villages in India, there are worshippers of ghosts. We have seen that in India, the lower class people sometimes go to the forest, and if they have knowledge that a ghost lives in a tree, they worship that tree and offer sacrifices. These different kinds of worship are not actually God worship. God worship is for persons who are transcendentally situated in pure goodness. In Srimad Bhagavatam 4.3.23, it is said, Satvam Vishuddham Vasudeva Shabditam. When a man is situated in pure goodness, he worships Vasudev. The purport is that those who are completely purified of the material modes of nature and who are transcendentally situated can worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So there's some more there that you can read. And these next verses, they're also interesting because they relate to the kinds of practices, you know, that these people will engage in. It says, text 5 and 6, those who undergo severe austerities and penances not recommended in the scriptures, performing them out of pride and egoism, and who are impelled by lust and attachment, who are foolish, and who torture the material elements of the body, as well as the supersoul dwelling within, are to be known as demons. So this is this, you know, like this poking holes in the body and burning the flesh and things like that. Yes?
Like, I saw in South America, the soccer fanatics worshipping, is that also
Yes. I was pointing out that this worship of sports heroes, of entertainment heroes, of political heroes, this is also a kind of worship, just like we see here they're worshiping Hitler and, you know, politicians and people like that too. This is also a misplaced kind of worship. So now I want to go on to, and then if you go through this chapter, it describes the foods eaten by the different kinds of people and the different modes of nature. So that's also something that you'll see in these different kinds of worship. Those more in the modes of ignorance, they just eat, you know, the most terrible, disgusting things. Whereas the devotees eat only food and foodstuffs in the pure mode of goodness, you know, offered to Krishna. Now the next text, you know, I want to go to is chapter 9:25. We can look at that because that's where Krishna explains what happens to these different personalities. You know, there's different results to these different kinds of worship. So and this is one of the more famous verses in the Bhagavad Gita. Yanti deva vrata devan pitrin yanti pitri vrataha bhutani yanti bhutejya yanti madhyajanopi mam. Those who worship the demigods will take birth among the demigods. Those who worship the ancestors go to the ancestors. Those who worship ghosts and spirits will take birth among such beings. And those who worship me will live with me, Krishna says. In his purport, Prabhupada explains, if one has any desire to go to the moon, the sun, or any other planet, one can attain the desired destination by following specific Vedic principles recommended for that purpose, such as the process technically known as Darsha Purnamasi. So the demigod worship is described there. And then Prabhupada goes on to say, similarly, one can attain the Pita planets by performing a specific yajna. Similarly, one can go to many ghostly planets and become a yaksha, raksha, or pisacha. Pisacha worship is called black arts or black magic. There are many men who practice this black art and they think that it is spiritualism, but such activities are completely materialistic. Similarly, a pure devotee who worships the Supreme Personality of Godhead only achieves the planets of Vaikuntha and Krishna Loka without a doubt. It is very easy to understand through this important verse that if by simply worshiping the demigods one can achieve the heavenly planets, or by worshiping the pitas achieve the pita planets, or by practicing the black arts achieve the ghostly planets, why can the pure devotee not achieve the planet of Krishna or Vishnu? Unfortunately, many people have no information of these sublime planets where Krishna and Vishnu live, and because they do not know them, they fall down. So this is one of the advantages is, you know, because many of these people who are involved in these kinds of ghost and spirit world, you know, they have this idea that there's something higher, it's personal, you can go there, but they just don't know about Krishna. So if they somehow or other, as Bhakta Antoine was saying, if they somehow or other learn about Krishna's planet and Krishna and his powers, and then, you know, they may become attracted. So that's so anyways, just to review the different points here, we find that this worship of demons, ghosts, and spirits, it's described by Krishna in Bhagavad Gita. People do accept that as a level of God realization. The reason that people want to do this, the people who take it up, they're mainly motivated by the modes of passion and ignorance. And then what do they want out of it? You know, they want a sense of power and control, and they want this lower grade of sense gratification, whether it's, you know, sex or money or power or whatever. They want it, and they think they can get it by either worshiping the powerful people in human society, or, you know, these ghosts, spirits, demons, people like that. Now, the disadvantage of this is that, I mean, these the practices that you have to undergo are just simply so hellish. You know, the activities are so hellish. And even if they achieve their goals, they still remain, you know, trapped in the material world and the cycle of birth and death. So how can this be dealt with? I think, you know, just by giving them the information about Krishna, that can help some of them. If they see how Krishna is killing all these demons that they think are so powerful, then they just might decide, well, since Krishna's the most powerful, you know, maybe we'll just go with him. But even by thinking of Krishna as an enemy, you know, we see in Krishna book how so many demons actually became liberated even by thinking of Krishna as an enemy. And just somehow or other, by the mercy of Krishna and his devotees, you know, this is Lord Chaitanya's movement, and the most amazing things can happen. And I think we, maybe even our personal lives are examples of that. So, does anybody have any further comments or questions? Veda Vyas.
Okay. This question regarding Reiki.
Reiki.
You know Reiki?
Not, I've heard the name, I know it's some kind of healing practice, but I really don't know much about it.
I was wondering about that, because it's a process where you get initiation, you go through cleansing, and eventually, through your hands, you get the universal, the Reiki, the universal energy, and then it goes through your chakra. It hits your heart, and from there it goes to your hand, and you can heal people. So, I've been practicing Reiki. But I heard something from Guru Krishna Maharaj and Lupitavani that there is this article that says how the person was practicing healing, and he felt that there was many hands healing the person felt healed. So, my question is, when a person accepts service from a higher power, there might be some payments. That means there is a person behind everything. So I was wondering if you think it's personal or it's a goal or it's a...
Well, generally speaking, I mean, from what I can see, these healers and people like that, they generally say it's some other, it's not, they're not doing it by their own power, there's some other power involved. Now, what kind of power that is ultimately, I think ultimately as devotees, of course, we want to leave everything in Krishna's hands, but yeah, you know, we do have to take care of our health, and I don't think there's any ban on any particular form of health practice, you know, that's, I mean, whatever, you know, if you trust the Western medicine, then you can deal with that. If you like Ayurveda, deal with that. But somehow or other, eventually you're going to leave the body, you know, and then we can't put our faith ultimately in, you know, like these kinds of healing practices and things like that. We can, you know, we can try to take care of our body as best we can while we're here, but ultimately our real disease is that we have a material body in the first place, and it could even be the body of a demigod. It's still not the original Swarupa. So Krishna consciousness is like the real medicine. It's like the real cure, you know, for the actual deep disease of the soul. So that's what we should really be focusing on. And then these other things, you know, I really don't have, you know, too much of an opinion on them one way or the other. You know, like, you know, just as long as it's kept in proper perspective, you know, like that. And the proper perspective is, you know, the real disease is, you know, just material existence. And the cure for that, chanting Hare Krishna, taking prasadam,
like that. Occasionally.
So today and tomorrow, we're going to be talking about the demigods. You know, people who worship the demigods as supreme. And then, you know, the next 2 days we'll talk about Brahman, you know, the people who see Brahman as supreme. And then that takes us up to Friday, which will be the day of our midterm exam. And sometime before Friday, I'll try to give you some hints about, you know, what's going to be on the midterm, so it won't be a complete surprise. So we're going up this hierarchy a little bit, up this ladder of levels of God realization. You know, we started out with the non-existence of God, which Krishna talks about in the Bhagavad Gita. Then we went to those who worship, you know, demons, ghosts, and spirits. You know, that's religion in the mode of passion and ignorance. And now we're going to go a little bit higher up there and talk about the demigods. And the demigods would be different than like these spirits, just like simple nature spirits. You know, the demigods would be more like more powerful creatures who are in charge of the larger forces of nature. That's generally what we think of when we think of demigod worship in the Bhagavad Gita. So, now you may not believe this, but I was also once a demigod worshiper. I'll tell you about that. My career as a demigod worshiper began... I went through a lot of things on my path to Krishna consciousness. But it began when I was a child living in Hawaii, which is down tropical islands in the Pacific Ocean. And once our family went on a vacation to the big island in the Hawaiian Islands, it's called Hawaii. And one day, while the rest of the family, you know, stayed back and rested, my father and I went on a hiking tour to Kilauea, which is a big volcano on the island of Hawaii. And it looks sort of like one of the craters on the moon. When you look at it, it's not like so much like a big tall mountain, but it's like a big hole in the ground, maybe about a mile or two across, with very steep sides that go, I don't know, maybe, you know, hundreds of feet down. And there's trails, at least at that time, this was quite a long time ago,